Life's good.
Never on.
Whoa.
Hard. Hard reset.
Come on, Brent.
Life's good.
Got real close.
The hair high, right?
Trying to hit two thirds.
Have they saved it for her? Yes, they have.
Welcome to Game of Stones, everybody. I am Sean Graham, Scott, alongside, as always, hello, Scott.
Sean, I got a question for you. Do you often wear different glasses? Is that right?
Correct. I have, I think, five or six pairs that I can rotate through.
Yeah. So how do you decide when it's time to wear a different pair? Do you wear a different pair every day, or what's the story here?
It's a great question. I think for me, I have a pair that I wear for exercising and physical activities.
Okay.
So I'll always wear the same pair curling, for instance, because that's the pair that's tightest on my head.
So yeah, you don't want them to fall down.
Yeah, so they're less likely to fall off. Otherwise, I do try to, because I have a bunch of different colors, so I just try to match with what I'm wearing. And, you know, as I have a I need them all the time, but I have a relatively or comparatively light prescription. So within my $200 every 2 years, I can get 3-4 pairs from somewhere like Clearly. And that allows me to go and rotate through. So I have like a black frame, a thick black frame that I wear curling. I got a green pair, a red pair, a blue pair, a gray pair. A couple of pairs of sunglasses. So yeah, I'm very fortunate that I can kind of rotate through.
Yeah, that's pretty good because my prescription is quite strong. And as a result, I don't change them because even very small adjustments to my pupillar distance, pupil distance, like can really throw off my eyes. So
sure.
But I was just thinking, my glasses I'm wearing right now are kind of dirty and I didn't have a rag to clean them with.
So you can just change them.
Maybe I'll just change them to the new ones, but they're upstairs. So anyway, I wanted to know because it's something I would like to do, but my glasses cost much more than our $200 every 2 years allotment. And so I tend to stick with one, but glad to hear you have the chance to take these options. Pretty cool.
Yeah. What I like too about it is that I don't have to go try them on. I can do the virtual thing. I say, oh, this color looks good. And I mean, there's one pair, the green pair isn't the most comfortable. So I'll wear it, but not always that frequently. And I don't know. I find too that after a couple of days, since I'm in the habit of rotating them out, just putting on a different pair feels fresh.
Yeah. Yeah. And I put on my other pair, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago. I was in the office and thought I'd do it. And yeah, I kind of had a headache all day.
Yeah.
But I know that goes away. So
yeah, it takes some time, but yeah, so there you go. That's how I do it.
All right, cool. Good to know. Thanks for the info.
All right. So, with that, let's turn our attention, Scott, to the world of curling. There's one news item that I want to get to at the end of the show. That was Emma Miskiw's comments on the Broom Brothers podcast about Curling Canada not letting Team Homan play in the Scotties. And she made a couple really salient points, I thought, that certainly are worth discussing. And so we'll get to that at the end of the show. But first, we will turn our attention back to Cortina over in Italy for the 2026 Paralympic Games, which haven't officially started, but like the Olympic Games, curling is going ahead of the opening ceremonies. The mixed doubles wheelchair competition opened up earlier today. We're recording this Wednesday evening. So early morning Thursday in Italy, the mixed doubles has already started. And like with the Olympic Games, once that's done, the four-person teams will take over. A bit of a difference in Paralympic play. One is it's shorter. The Paralympics are just shorter overall in all areas than the Olympic Games. With the mixed doubles, you have 8 teams in a round robin and 10 teams in the four-person game. Same playoff format. 4 teams make the playoffs, semifinal, and a final. So, Scott, let's go through these fields And we'll start with the mixed doubles. But before we get into the actual teams, I don't know if you saw this, Scott, but a delightful story, unless you're the World Curling Federation. Coming out of Cortina today, Devin Haru, I believe, broke this. Scott, are you familiar with the story? Do you know what I'm going to say?
I don't know.
Okay, this is great. We got some drama over in Cortina, but not over a touchstone as we had with Mark Kennedy, or if you remember 2022, the controversy between Canada and China on the burned rock there. In that event, nothing like that, Scott. We are looking at a heist. Two rocks from the venue have been stolen ahead of the competition. So they are two rocks short as it is right now. So they are using the same stones for mixed doubles as they use during the mixed doubles during the Olympics, and four-person rocks will be the same. The sets were not the same between the mixed doubles and the four-person games at the Olympics, just so that you didn't have the Gallants and Mowats and Constantinis of the world throwing the same stones. So they're doing the same thing here in the Paralympic Games, but two rocks are gone, Scott. They left.
They just walked away.
Had enough.
A rock heist. Wow.
Yeah. So the story has been picked up internationally. One of the British outlets noted that they're valued at about 750 pounds, the two stones. So I think for me, it's like, who, why, and how?
Yeah, Sean, you could be a journalist asking these exact questions that journalists would have.
Like, who's taking it? Like, what do you do? Like, what are you doing with it? You're putting it in your house?
And like, yeah, they're valued at whatever, but like, they're pretty useless, not as a set.
Yeah, as Paul Gross told us, they're useless on their own.
Yeah.
But when in the right hands, they exact a type of poetry. But Scott, it's like, well, so Steph, our friend Steph was telling us on Monday, or telling me at least during our game on Monday night, that the plan for World Curling was actually to break up these stones and sell them for $100-something. Like, you get a piece of the Olympic stone. So, okay, you get a little memento, 2026 Olympics. Of course, everybody wants the Kennedy double touch stone. You don't get to pick which actual stone it is, but they would tell you apparently, hey, this is like rock four, red, sheet three, or whatever.
Yeah.
So they were going to do that, but now they have two fewer stones from the mixed doubles to do that with.
I think this is wild. Like, yeah, where did they go?
Yeah.
And how does things just go missing?
Right?
I don't know.
Yeah. So they've brought in spare stones. They do have spare stones.
Of course.
So they have those and they've been brought up to the same specifications in terms of the texturing and all that. So the stones should be the same. The teams were also made aware of which two stones were different and were added so that they could have an expectation of, okay, these might run a little differently because they weren't used during the Olympic Games, so therefore they don't have as much wear on them as the other ones. But yeah.
Wow. Were they, do you know if they were put into like one sheet, one of each color? Were they?
They haven't specified that to us.
Okay.
That's not in the story, but the players apparently are aware.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So there you go, a little drama to kick off the 2026 Paralympic Games.
Not bad, not bad. Because, well, let's talk about it. Is there going to be much drama on the ice?
We'll see. I mean, we did see, as I said, in 2022, I'm pretty sure it was 2022, the drama between Canada and China where a rock hit the Canadian skip's chair.
Yeah.
And clearly was going out, but China left it in, which is their right as the non-offending team, but
also kind of
yeah. So we could have something like that again. I think since there's no sweeping in the wheelchair game, and when you're throwing with the stick, you don't have the same opportunities to have burned rocks or perception of burned rocks. So I think the only real controversy you could have is something like what happened last time, where something in the house.
Yeah, something in the house. Yeah, that would be it.
So I hope not.
I hope not too. I hope not too. And in terms of the games themselves and like who we think's going to win, I think the mixed doubles field is a little more wide open than the four-person field, but let's get to it.
Yes, and let me just correct myself here. I just looked up. It was 2018 when it was Mark Idison. It hit his chair back in 2018, not in 2022. So
that's wild that that's that long ago. Because
it doesn't feel like it was that long ago. No. So there you go. So all right. So we'll go through the mixed doubles teams here. Won't go into too much detail in terms of previewing the teams, just because the event has already started. So we'll go through, we'll go based on the world ranking. So we'll start, Scott, with the Koreans, the top ranked country in the world. It's Baek Hee-jin and Lee Young-suk. This country of South Korea won the 2024 World Championship in mixed doubles, but that was not this team. It was Cho Min-young and Jiang Ta-young. So this team has actually never played in a world championship, but they did beat that 2024 world championship team. They also beat Kim Hae-min and Jung Jun-ho, the 2025 Korean champions. And what's interesting to me, Scott, about the way Korea's working its wheelchair program is that they've created almost like a league system. So like what they do with the men's and women's play, they'll have their competition and that team will be Team Korea through the following season. Right. So what the situation has been is that Korea has been getting better and better, and the really good depth of field that they have is growing. And so now we have a situation where your 2024 world champions aren't in this field because another Korean team beat them out. And so the expansion of the wheelchair game in Korea is really a positive. And whereas most countries are still going with the national governing body picking the team, Korea's gone to a full-on just competition, win, you're in system for both the mixed doubles and the four-person game. And they're seeing some pretty good results. And so even though this is a relatively unknown team internationally, since they haven't played in a world championship, just coming out of that system, out of that program, you got to think that there's some high expectations for the Korean side.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, they're the number one ranked association. So they're producing good talent. And yeah, they should have high expectations this week.
All right. Next up, the second ranked country in the world, it is Japan. They are represented by Aki Ogawa and Noji Yakijima. These two players were on the 2010 Paralympic team back in Vancouver. But more importantly, Scott, these are your 2025 world champions. So they are coming in as the reigning world champs in the mixed doubles discipline. They went 4-2 in the round robin last year, beat Canada in the quarterfinal, Estonia in the semifinal, and then beat Scotland in the final. So for as much as Korea is the number one ranked association, I think given that these are the two individuals who are your reigning world champions, got to say that they are probably your favorites coming into the week.
Probably. Yeah. They last world championships. Yeah. They beat Canada in that game that knocked Canada out.
Yeah.
They were, I think 5-1 through their round robin. They 4-2, through their group, finishing second in the group. And that's why they had to play Canada, who was 6-0, out of their group. So they took the long way. Everybody plays quarterfinals, but they took a harder path than maybe some of the other teams. And managed to do it, though, right? There's a lot of variance in mixed doubles. We say in wheelchair mixed doubles, there can be even more variance. Lots of big ends. Looking at the games that happened at the World Championships last year, like there was a lot of steals, there was a lot of power plays that turned into fours, stuff like that. So this team, yeah, having the experience of winning a World Championship, sure, you got to be high on their hopes for the podium.
All right, let's move on to the third ranked country here. It is Latvia. They're represented by Polina Roskova and Agris Lasmans. They are the 2024 world champions in the mixed doubles. Both these players were on the 2022 Paralympic team. They went 4-6 in the round robin there. They were unable to defend their world championship last year, obviously, since Japan won. They did go 3-3 and missed the playoffs there. We'll talk about what a bit of a complicated tie. Well, not really that complicated, but it was a cluster in their pool in the 2025 World Championship, which was bad for them and missing the playoffs, but good for another country that we'll get to. So, Scott, when we look at Latvia, and we'll talk about them in the four-person side, these are their two best players. And when we look at the four-person team, maybe the expectation is probably not as high because they're not playing, especially when you got Agris. He's been around a long time and really good player. So I think if you're looking at the Latvian expectations or the hopes of Latvian curling in the Paralympics, I think it's on these two and not as much on the four person team.
Yeah, I think that's right. Looking at their plus minus from the World Championships, they seem to be at like the near the top of the table for percentages. At that mixed doubles, you're right, these are the two best players, and they're going to be the ones that dictate how the Latvian experience, I guess, in curling at the Olympics or at the Paralympics is going to be remembered.
All right, next up, Scott, it is Great Britain. Little bit of a more confusing situation for British curling here than we had at the Olympic Games, where the Olympic Games, it was just Scotland. England, Jonathan, guys, it's nice that you do it. We love you. But British curling, not too interested. The Paralympic side, the wheelchair game, England and Scotland are both pretty good. Both have good world rankings. So in both the four-person and in the mixed doubles, we have a even mix of English and Scottish players. So on the mixed double side, it is Joe Butterfield, who is English, and then Jason Keane, who is Scottish. Joe is relatively new to curling. She's a para-track athlete, a 2016 Paralympic appearance. She's a thrower, and her event was taken off the athletics schedule for the Paralympics. So she's shifted over to the curling side. Scotland is your silver medalist from the 2025 World Championship, but that was Hugh Niblow and Charlotte McKenna who were that team representing Scotland. So a bit of an unknown here for Joe Butterfield and Jason Keane, but just take Joe's background as a high level athlete. So obviously she's got the athletic prowess. And yes, I realize that athletic throwing, like summer sport throwing, is different from throwing a rock on ice. But, you know, not so different that you can't pick it up and be successful, obviously. So I don't know, Scott. I think there's just the unknown with this team. But British curling is always going to put out a pretty strong team in all these competitions.
Yeah. Do we know, Sean, why they were taken? Did they win the British trials, or were they placed?
I believe they were appointed. Yes.
Appointed. Yeah. So yeah, like a different team than won the world or was silver medalist last year, like you said. So a bit of an unknown. Yeah. We'll see how their week gets going, and you know, we could see anything.
All right, next up is the United States of America, represented by Laura Dwyer and Stephen Empt. This is the third Paralympic appearance for Empt. He is 56 years old, one of the older Paralympians over in Italy this year. This is the team that represented the United States at the 2025 World Championship. They went 4-2 in pool play, lost the tiebreaker to Japan for the final playoff spot out of that pool, and they lost that game to Japan 8-7. So they were 1 point out from the playoffs to the eventual world champions. So you can see how tight some of the margins are in the not only the mixed doubles game, but when you're talking about playoffs and stuff in a relatively short round robin, you know, this round robin is only going to be one game longer than last year at the World Championship. So key to get off to a good start. But Scott, this is obviously a very good team and a team that you would expect to be in the mix come the end of the week.
Yeah, given their pedigree, the rank of the association and what they've done, what we've seen them do in the past, I'd put them in the running for the podium for sure.
All right, next up is China, the wheelchair curling powerhouse of the world. This is they are represented by Wang Meng and Yang Jinchao. Wang was on the gold medalist team from the 2018 Paralympics. So we have a gold medalist on this team. This pairing won silver at the 2024 World Mixed Doubles Championship. And last year in 2025, they went 4-2. They lost the tiebreaker to both Japan and the United States. So it was a three-way tie between China, Japan, and the United States. Japan beat both China and the USA. The Americans did beat China. So, Scott, when we look at this particular team, obviously some success with a silver medal back in 2024 and a good week going 4-2 last year. And then you just look at Chinese wheelchair curling being the preeminent association in this discipline, in wheelchair curling, that, okay, maybe these two aren't the favorites given results that we have elsewhere in the field, but they're also like not the favorites.
You know? Yeah. Like you said, did you say they were second in 2024?
Yeah.
So yeah. And Chinese Chinese wheelchair curling, we'll get to it when we talk the four person game, but a real powerhouse. So I would be pretty surprised if this team wasn't at least challenging for that top half. You know what? I'd be surprised if they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Scott, let's move on to Estonia. I mentioned a team that benefited from a tie break. It is the Estonians. Katlin Rydback and Ain Vilau. They went 3-3 at the 2025 World Championships, but they beat the defending champion Latvians in the round robin, and that was the game that got them into the playoffs. They held the tiebreaker over the Latvians, got into those playoffs, and then beat Norway in the quarterfinal. They did lose to Japan in the semifinal, but won the bronze medal over the Koreans. And Scott, that is what put them over the top to get in. They are the last team in this field in terms of qualifying via points. And they did get passed over in the rankings by Japan, but they held onto their spot by winning that bronze medal last year. I don't think this team is necessarily looking at as maybe a podium threat. Maybe they are, but especially in mixed doubles where anything can happen. But a really cool story for them to come through, really a high pressure event for them last year at the World Championship, and got the key wins when they need them.
Yeah, absolutely. The key wins when they needed them, like you said, and anything can happen. They're obviously talented enough to be in the mix here, and we'll see who they're able to beat, right? If they're able to beat those teams that we are expecting to be in the top of the field, like the China, US, and Korea, if they can beat one or two of those, then they'll absolutely be in the mix for that fourth playoff spot.
All right, and the final team in the field, again, only an 8-team field here in the mixed doubles. It is the host Italians. They are ranked 9th in the world rankings. So it is Slovakia who missed out based on points. But the Italians are represented by Orietta Berto and Paolo Iorgiati. They went 2-4 at the 2025 World Championship. More success in 2024. They did go 4-2. And beat Slovakia in the quarterfinal, lost to the Koreans in the semifinal, but ended up winning the bronze medal over the Japanese side. So, again, they're in on points. So, you kind of have this thing of like, well, okay, host team and on points. Like, don't necessarily have the highest expectations of them. But this team, this pairing, has been on the podium. But I do kind of think it's a little like an Estonia situation where the skill, the ability certainly is there, to make a run, but I think the pedigree of some of the other teams is a little higher, and I think it would take a lot for the Italians to be on the podium.
Yeah, the variance is going to be high for this team.
Yeah.
So I agree, but we're not talking about the results from the first draw, right?
Well, we can. I don't know what happened.
They beat Korea.
Okay. How about that?
Yeah.
It's a great start for them.
So good start for them. They got Estonia next. We'll see how that one goes. And then China. So, you know, if they're coming out of that 2-1.
If they come out 2-1, that's pretty good. Yeah.
You gotta like that. You gotta like that.
100%. And yeah, good start for them. And yeah, you can't downplay the crowd factor. Like the Italian fans were going nuts the whole Olympic Games. So they get that level of crowd support, stuff can happen.
I hope so.
Yeah. And what's cool is, again, with the different style of play, of course, with no sweeping, communication isn't as important. So the fans can go nuts the whole time.
And
just have at it, everybody.
Just, you know, yell. Why not? I like it.
Yeah. So those are the eight teams in the mixed doubles field. Scott, who do you like?
I like... is it so boring to say China? Yeah, it's boring.
Well, the four person it is. That's more interesting in the mixed doubles.
Okay. I think for the podium, I like the US, China, and Korea in some order.
Okay.
Give me the US over Korea in the final and China getting the bronze.
All right. I like Latvia, Japan, and the United States. I also like the United States here. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go with, give me Latvia over Japan in the final.
Hey, let's go.
Okay.
Baltic gold medal.
Yeah, we like that, right?
We like that.
Yeah. All right, Scott, let's shift our attention over to the four-person game. 10 teams are in the field here, and it is a mix of men and women all playing together. So let's start again with the number one ranked team in the world, and no surprise on who that is. It is China, represented by Wang Heixiao, alongside Chen Jianxin, Zhang Minglian, and Li Nana. Three of these four players, Wang, Chen, and Zhang, were on the 2022 gold medal winning team. Wang and Chen were also on the 2018 gold medal winning team. So you have the back end players here are the two-time defending gold medalist in the four-person game. And then Li Nana is new from 2022, the only new player here on this team. At the 2025 World Championship, they went 9-2, beat Canada in the semifinal and South Korea in the final. Wang Heixiao is a four-time world wheelchair curling champion, 2019, 2021, 2023, and 2025. You'll notice that those are all odd-numbered years. Didn't win in 2024. Of course, didn't have the opportunity to in 2022 because of the Paralympic Games. I won a gold medal at that. So maybe it doesn't actually mean anything. Scott, he is only 36 years old and he's already done all this. So if he is so inclined, he could have just one of the all-time runs. He's already had an all-time run and could continue. He'll only be 40 by the time the next Paralympics roll around. Their stats at the 2025 Worlds, not only did they win it, but their stats were just bonkos when compared to the rest of the field. 56% hammer efficiency, that was first in the field by a lot. Canada was second at 39%, so a 17% difference between first and second place. They also had a 79% force efficiency, which was first in the field by a ton. They gave up only six deuces in 13 games. Those were the only multiple point scores against the only team in the field who didn't give up a three or more. And part of the reason for that is Wang Heixiao is known for weight. He can throw the up weight best in the world at it, and therefore that allows them to be defensive when they need to, and he can bail them out of tough spots. So, Scott, when you have a team and a player, especially at the skip position, who can get you out of jams, and the rest of the team, the rest of the lineup is very strong. I know I'm kind of just waxing poetics about how great they are, but this has really just been a dynastic team in the wheelchair game, And it's going to take a monumental effort for anybody else to win.
Yeah, they're like so far ahead in the rankings. I've got the rankings here. This is including this year, so this is not how they qualified. But the Chinese have 91.667 points. The next closest team is Canada at 68.254. They're like,
that's crazy.
50% better on points than the next best team. That's pretty incredible. Yeah, obviously the favorite for the gold medal. And it would take a monumental effort to unseat them.
All right, well then let's talk about some of the teams who will try to do that. And we'll go to Canada, second ranked association in the world in the four-person game. This year they will be skipped by Mark Idison alongside John Thurston, Ina Forrest, and Kalinda Joseph. Gilbert Dash is the alternate. This is a change from the team that appeared at the 2025 World Championship. Mark Idison and Ina Forrest were the mixed doubles representatives. They had a good week. They went 6-0 and just lost that quarterfinal game. Mm-hmm. So Gilbert Dash was the skip at those World Championship, and John Thurston was the fourth thrower there. But by bringing back Mark Idison and Ina Forrest into the fold for the Paralympics, you have a lot of experience here. Mark Idison won a gold medal in 2014, 2018, and 2022 bronze medalist in the four-person game. He was skipping in 2022, throwing the lead stones. Kalinda Joseph was on that 2022 team, as was John Thurston. Ina Forrest is the most experienced on this team. This is going to be her fifth Paralympic appearance. She, in addition to the 2014 gold and the 2018-2022 bronzes, she won gold in Vancouver back in 2010. In 2022, this team went 7-3, lost to China in the semifinal, beat Slovakia to win the bronze medal. At the World Championship in 2025, they did go 6-5. Don't know how much you can necessarily take from that, given the lineup changes that we've seen. No disrespect to Gilbert Dash and the folks who were there, but Mark Idison, Ina Forrest, again, just so much experience. And as we said with the mixed doubles, Scott, it could be loud in there. The Italian fans could be going nuts the whole time, but so much experience on this team, they're not going to get thrown by that. And yeah, China, I think, is the just overall, like, definitely the favorites, and favorites by a lot. But Canada has got to be a medal favorite as well.
Yeah, and a lot of experience, Sean. Also one of the oldest teams, I think, in the field, right? Average age is over 50 for those five players. So a lot of experience on the team. I think Canada's put together their best lineup. We'll see. Not having to field a team for the mixed doubles event means that they were able to put all their best players together in one shot. And we'll see.
Yeah, and it's good in the sense of, yes, you have the most experienced team possible in the four-person game, but you also maybe are slowing the development of some of the younger players. And we talked about this, I think, last year. Well, what happens now that they've missed the field, the Paralympics in the mixed doubles? And will this, like, I don't know. The next quad is going to be very interesting for the wheelchair program in Canada and what they decide to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Scott, let's move on to the third ranked nation in the four-person game. That is Sweden. They will be skipped by Villo Peterson Dahl alongside Ronnie Persson, Sabrina Johansson, and Christina Olander. This is going to be the third Paralympic appearance for Peterson Dahl. Sabrina Johansson was the alternate back in 2022. That team went 7-3, beat Slovakia in the semifinals, lost to China in the final to take home the silver medal. This is the same lineup as we had at the 2025 World Championship. That team went 7-4, lost to Slovakia in the quarterfinals, 27% hammer efficiency. That was the second lowest hammer efficiency of all of the playoff teams. So Scott, they are going to have to be better in that regard to get back into playoff position.
Yeah, but they're definitely capable. One of the best teams, like you mentioned, out there. So I see this team definitely posing a threat to all the other teams out there.
All right, Scott, let's stay in Europe and let's go over to Norway, where the Norwegians are represented by Justin Stordal, Geir Arne Skogstad, Ole Fredrik Siversen, and Mia Larsen Sveberg. Stordal is the fourth stone thrower, but Skogstad is the skip of this team. Scott, Justin Stordal is making his ninth Paralympic appearance. First appearance back in 1988 in Seoul as a weightlifter.
Wow.
Then shifted over to sailing between 1996 and 2008. And then thought, what if the water was frozen? And shifted over to curling in 2010. So this will be his fifth Paralympics as a curler. This team went 4-6 in 2022, but Stordal did win the silver medal back in 2018. This is the same lineup as we had at the 2025 World Championship that went 6-5 in the round robin, lost to Canada in the quarterfinals, a 23% hammer efficiency. That was the worst of the playoff teams and had a negative point differential. Gave up 18 multiple scores against in 12 games. They're going to have to tighten up that defense here because they were the lowest ranked team to get into the playoffs. But in that field, six teams get in. This one, only four do. So they're going to have to tighten up on the edges here if they want to get back into a playoff spot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think based on that, they are going to have some trouble not being able to convert with the hammer, not being able to force. It's going to be tough, but who am I to say that a 9-time Paralympian can't make it onto the podium?
That's true. It's a fair point.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should note too, Scott, I missed this, but just to jump back to Sweden too, I want to just note Ali Kreviatic is the coach for the Swedish team.
Oh, nice. So,
all right, Scott, let's move on now to Korea. And they are going to be skipped by Yang Hu-tae alongside Nam Bong-kwang, Lee Hyung-chul, and Bang Min-ja. So this team, as mentioned with the mixed doubles, came through the competitive format that the Koreans have set up. That was set up following the 2018 Paralympic and Olympic Games or Paralympic Games in Pyeongchang. So that league system was set up. So a more competitive environment. Cool story here with Nam Bong-kwang, is married to Baek Hee-jin in the mixed doubles. So kind of cool. You have a married couple there that they'll be able to watch each other's games the whole time because the events are taking place sequentially. So kind of a cool thing there. They'll have their spousal support. So a cool story there. And Scott, since Korea introduced this competitive system, they've only finished outside of the top six in the World Championship once. And that has created, as we talked about, a lot of sustained success for the program, the association. But it also leads to different people going. So the accumulation of experience is different for the Koreans than a lot of other teams. So because of that, all four of these players are new to the Paralympic Games. Mm-hmm. This team was essentially the same as was the 2025 World Championship team, but we have some lineup changes.
Yeah.
Yang Hu-tae was the second in the 2025 Worlds. Lee Hyun-chul was the skip. So we have lineup changes. Bang Min-ja did not play at the 2025 Worlds. So we have a lineup changes here, all new from the 2022 Paralympic Games. The team, as was constructed at those World Championship last year, did go 8-3, beat Slovakia in the semifinal, lost to the Chinese in the semifinals. Lost to the Chinese in the finals for the silver medal, tied for third in hammer efficiency at 35%, but they were able to steal 20 ends for 26 points in 13 games. So that's pretty impressive to me, but also denotes a bit of an aggressive style to be able to pull out almost a little more than a steal and a half per game.
Yeah, pretty good. Definitely pretty good. I think the experience is going to help them, Sean. The experience as all of them having played at that world championship last year, learning quite a bit. They did lose by a lot to China in the final. I think it was 14-3.
Yeah, it was a big spread in the final. But again, we spent 5 minutes talking about how great China is in this. So.
Yeah. So, this is one of those teams. I think the variance is high.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, I agree. There could be, if they're playing as aggressively as the stats indicate that they did last year at the World Championship, yeah, you have a lot of variance when you're doing that. Mm-hmm. All right, Scott, let's move on to Great Britain. Scotland is the sixth ranked association in the wheelchair game. And as mentioned, it is a mix of English and Scottish players. So Hugh Niblow is the skip alongside Stuart Pimblett, Austin McKenzie, and Karen Aspie. Stuart Pimblett was the skip for the English side at the 2025 World Championships. Karen Aspie is English. Austin McKenzie is Scottish. At those 2025 World Championships, Scotland went 5-6. England also went 5-6, but Scotland beat England. So Hugh Niblow, you get to skip.
Wow. Stuart,
I don't know if that's actually how they decided it, but in my head, that was the tiebreaker. Both teams lost out to Slovakia in the tiebreaker for the last playoff spot. They both lost to Slovakia. Niblow did win silver at the mixed doubles world championship last year, but playing in the four-person game here. Scott, given that we're bringing two teams together, and I realize that it's not like the Scotland and England, it's not like two countries that are coming together that like have linguistic differences or anything like that, but you are bringing two different teams together, having them try to come together in a relatively short amount of time and play in the pinnacle of the sport. That's an interesting challenge, but given that both associations had points, I think it's probably the only thing they could have done.
Yeah, I think so, right? Like, yeah, it's kind of only fair to give both associations a representation in the Olympic Games. There's no other country that really needs to worry about that.
No.
So just a quirk of how the Paralympics and Olympics work with Great Britain fielding the team all together. So good compromise.
But a challenge, I think, for the players.
A challenge for sure. A challenge for the coaches, probably.
Yep.
Right? And for the players to understand how their new teammates throw. So, yeah, but not insurmountable and probably a lot easier in wheelchair curling than in the four-person game where, like, the non-wheelchair curling where the sweeping matters and the communication is that much more important.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you don't have to learn as much. But still, as the skip, you still have to know.
You have to know where to put the broom and
the release is still going to be a little different. And
yeah.
So true. Still a learning curve for sure for this team. So that one will be interesting to keep an eye on. All right, let's move on to Slovakia, seventh ranked country in the world, skipped by Peter Zatko alongside Radoslav Duris, Adrian Dershek, and Monika Kunkolova. Zatko is appearing at his fourth Paralympics. Monika Kunkolova at her fourth. The only new player from 2022 is at the second position there with Adrian Dershek. At those 2022 Paralympic Games, this team went 7-3 for second place in the round robin, but lost to Sweden in the semifinals, lost to Canada in the bronze medal game for a fourth place finish. It is the same lineup as we had at the 2025 World Championship that went 5-6. That did sneak them into the playoffs. They beat Sweden in the quarterfinals, lost to Korea in the semifinals, lost to Canada in the bronze medal game. Scott, at that event, they scored 4 fours, which is always good, but they also gave up 3 fours and 2 5+ ends. And if you look at the peripheral numbers for this team, they were all middling when you look at compared to the rest of the field. So, mm-hmm. you know, they snuck into the playoffs. They did beat Sweden to get into the medal games, but I don't know. Some of that, I think, was a bit of smoke and mirrors when you look at the surrounding numbers and some of the point differentials in the games. It just, what they did at those world championships is not a sustainable way to find success at these competitions.
Yeah. And once they got into the playoffs, their hammer conversion percentage was 9%. So, you know, playing the teams that are ahead of them in the standings was a bit difficult. So my expectations are not as high for this team as for others. That said, who knows?
All right. Next up is the United States of America. They're represented by Matt Thumes, Sean O'Neill, Dan Rose, and Oyunya Urenchimeg. Thumes is the only player from the 2022 team who is back. That team ended up in 5th place. The best result for the Americans at the Paralympic Games was a 4th place finish back in Vancouver in 2010. Matt and Oyunya are the only two from the 2025 Worlds who are playing here at the Paralympic Games. That team at the 2025 Worlds ended up in 11th place. They were, though, in the top half of the field on force efficiency. Only a 24% hammer efficiency. And then, Scott, they gave up 26 steals against for 41 points in 11 games. So they were doing a good job without the hammer by having a high force efficiency relative to the rest of the field, top half. But they're not converting their hammers, and they were giving up a ton of steals. So, you know, keep playing aggressive when you don't have the hammer. They were successful. They found some success that way. But by giving up the 26 steals, maybe pull it back, rein it in a little bit when you have the hammer.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, is that when you've got the hammer, try and keep things simple as much as you can, because otherwise it's going to be a real tough sledding for you come the time to play that Chinese team, the Canadian team, all that kind of stuff. You want to keep it simple.
Yeah, especially that Chinese team with their ability with the up weight. If you have a lot of stuff that maybe it gives them angles and there's a lot of Chinese stones hanging around, that's a key, you know, a recipe to give up a big end.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Scott, let's move on to the 9th ranked team in this field. It is Latvia, represented by Sergej Djiatchenko, Ojar Bridis, Linda Mayhir, and Adelaide Killian. This is the 3rd Paralympics for Djiatchenko. Djiatchenko played 3rd in 2022 at the Paralympics, the only returnee from that team here in 2026. The Latvians went 4-6 back in 2022, which was good for 9th place. Kind of nuts that 4-6 got them only 9th place. It was the country's best result at a Paralympics. Bridis was skipping the team at the 2025 Worlds. Djiatchenko was throwing 3rd. Agris Lasman was throwing the last stone, but Agris is over in the mixed doubles here, as we talked about, probably the best player from the Latvian side. He's over playing in the mixed doubles. So we have now Djiatchenko moving up to throw the 4th, Bridis throwing 3rd. So essentially everybody has moved up. Adelaida is the only addition to this team, throwing the lead stones. And again, everybody has kind of been promoted a position from those world championships. And in those world championships, the Latvian side went 3-8. Worst force efficiency in the field at 35% and gave up 25 multiples against in 11 games. So Scott, not great numbers from that team in the 2025 Worlds. And then you're losing arguably their strongest player. So at least my hopes aren't too high for the Latvians here.
Yeah, it's going to be an uphill road for Team Latvia come this event. And so, yeah, I don't really know what more to say other than, yeah, they've given up a lot of steals, given up a lot of points. And so really going to need to come together as a team to try and claw their way onto that fourth playoff spot. But my hopes are not high.
It's going to be a going to be a challenge for sure. So let's go to the final team in the field. It is your host, the Italians, skipped by Egidio Marchisi, Fabrizio Beek, Matteo Rosani, and Angela Minardi. First time at the Paralympics for the Italians since 2010. So, you know, definitely benefit from being the host in that regard. This is the same team as appeared at the 2025 World Championship. They went 4-7, but pretty close in some of the peripheral numbers. They lost by a single point to Sweden and Latvia. 35% hammer efficiency, 43% force efficiency. In the aggregate, those are pretty good relative to the rest of the field. Pretty middling numbers, but they lost a couple extra close games and don't get into the playoffs. So in the aggregate, I think their numbers are not terrible and they have a chance to be competitive in this field, but something to keep note of in those 2025 World Championships, they were dead last in the last stone draw. And if we have a similar situation as we had at those Worlds where there was a bunch of teams clustered together, that's not going to get the job done because you're going to have to be higher in those rankings. Again, if we're going to see a cluster like we saw last year.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Where they really faltered was they gave up 5 4-point ends. Everything else was, like you said, middling numbers. I'd agree, but it was quite close. They gave up fewer stolen points than they got. So maybe a bit unlucky for them to finish as low as they did. I think we should be able to see, you know, that crowd that we talked about earlier, maybe helping propel this team too. So I'd watch out for them. I wouldn't pick them to win the medal, but you know, if we looked up at the end of the week and they're, you know, 6-3, it wouldn't really surprise me.
Yeah, no, they definitely have the potential to have a really good run here at the Paralympics. So, Scott, those are the 10 teams in the field for the four-person wheelchair event. Who do you like on the podium here?
Well, I think, you know, we talked up China so much, we'd be pretty dumb to not pick them to win. Obviously, so much better than the other teams. Then give me Canada, and I'm going to take this ragtag thrown together Great Britain team.
Okay.
Up onto the podium.
Okay. All right. I like the top two as well. Just for fun, I'll put Canada on top over China in the gold medal game. And then I like the Korean team as well to get on the podium here. So give me Canada, China, and Korea in that order. So there you have it, the 18 teams that will be competing at the Paralympic Games, 8 in the mixed doubles and 10 in the four person. So that'll be fun to watch. The games have already started in the mixed doubles. The event has already kicked off. I don't know, it's a surprising result in that first draw. I hadn't seen that, Scott, that we already had the one. I don't know, do you want to call it an upset?
Yeah, yeah, that's a pretty big upset. I mean, Italy won as well. Is that the one I was talking about?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Italy won. Estonia beat Great Britain, and the U.S. beat Latvia.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's pretty good.
So, yeah, some pretty good. We saw in the U.S. game, Latvia got a 4 with their power play. Gave up a 3 the very next end, then some steals, and then, yeah, a big 4 for the U.S. in the last end sort of broke it open, and they got the win.
Nice. Okay. Good stuff. So things are off and rolling over in Cortina. They are not, I was wrong, Scott, they're not running these fully sequentially, even though the mixed doubles kicked off today. So the playoffs for the mixed doubles will take place, semifinals on Tuesday the 10th, and then the medal games will be Wednesday the 11th, coming up next week. And then for the four-person game, semifinals will be Friday the 13th, with the bronze medal game taking place later there on the 13th. And the gold medal game will be next Saturday, the 14th of March, 3 o'clock local time over in Italy. So you can get up, have your Wheaties, have your orange juice, and watch the wheelchair gold medal match.
Yeah, that'll be good. There's two draws a day for each discipline. So I guess that's how they're doing it.
Yeah, that's a nice way to do it, I guess.
Like, well, two draws for the mixed doubles Thursday, but one draw a day after that.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can fit it in. I mean, maybe they should do this for the Olympics too. You could fit in four draws.
Just do it. Why just not? Do it.
Come on. You cowards. Cowards at World Curling. Do it,
cowards.
Yeah. All right. So there you have it. Paralympics in Canada. Everything will be available through GEM. Not as wall to wall as the Olympic Games are in terms of the broadcast, but everything is available through GEM. So if you want to check it out there. Other countries, I don't know, but presumably, I believe in the United States, everything through the whatever the NBC app is called,
Peacock.
Peacock, I believe, has coverage of the Paralympic Games. So usually, my understanding, whichever outlet has Olympic coverage, they also have the Paralympic coverage.
That is typically the way.
Yeah. So check it out wherever you are and however you can watch it. These games are usually really fun at the Paralympic Games. So encourage you to check it out. Mentioned Scott at the top, a couple bits of news. We won't get into too much detail about team breakups at this point, but Krista Scharff is not retiring, but is also not retiring, as well as a couple other members of that team. So that run has come to an end, at least for now, in Northern Ontario. So just want to note that, along with a bunch of other team breakups that have been announced. But Scott, the thing that caught my eye this week, news-wise, don't want to spend too much time on it, because this, I think, is something to talk about in the summer when we have a little more time and there's not all these games going on. But it is an important point. Emma Miskiw went on the Broom Brothers podcast, talked about how Curling Canada basically told them they can't play. They're not allowed to play in the Scotties. And we've talked about this before, of how that kind of makes sense, in that given that Curling Canada, with the Olympics, as Scotties goes first, Briar goes after, just in how the schedule breaks and they're thinking about TV coverage, all those things that Curling Canada thinks about. What that effectively means, though, is that now that we've seen in the last two Olympic cycles, the men's Olympic team can come play in the Briar. And what Emma was talking about, or the thing that caught my attention more than just the inability to defend their title, to go to another world championship, you're effectively taken out of that. But she also noted the prize money that Jacobs here is going to make the play. He's already clinched a playoff spot as we speak, but even coming back exhausted, those guys probably going to make the playoffs, and that's a guaranteed $30,000 essentially. Even if they're finished dead last, they got 2,500, but they're likely we're talking at least five figures for them to come back and get that prize money. And that is an opportunity the women's Olympic representative does not have. There is no prize money for winning the trials. You do get access to Canadian Olympic Committee funding that you don't get if you don't win the trials. But in terms of prize money, here's a pot of money that is available to the men that are not, that is not available to the women. So for as much as Curling Canada has done a good job in equalizing the pay at the events, here's a situation where your best women's team doesn't have the same opportunity, both in terms of playing and competition and championships, both national and worlds, but financially they're disadvantaged compared to the men by going to the Olympics.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's not great. It's not a good look. The easiest thing to do would be to say to the men's team, you can't play.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But these are both like really, really good teams who earn their money doing curling. And these are two huge paydays that obviously they both would like. You could move the Scotties a week earlier than it was held. And then you've got an extra week. Cause I think the Scotties ended on a Sunday. The team left for the Olympics Wednesday.
Well, the mixed doubles started the Wednesday.
The mixed doubles started, but the team,
I can't remember.
They left a couple of days after the Scotties to get situated and
they had do some sort of a camp too, I think, with Jacobs.
Yeah.
Somewhere they had a bit of a training camp.
So if you give an extra week of a buffer for that, that's something that probably could be done, right?
Yeah.
They're already moving it up from their usual spot mid-February. And then you give them the option to play in it or not. Like, they had already qualified, right? Which, you know, if you had a team win the trials who hadn't qualified for the Scotties, I mean, that would be pretty surprising. But
you got to go to provincials.
Yeah. Go to provincials and win your spot. Then you don't have that question. But this team, like, she's right. That's a pretty big payday. And to be honest, they probably would have been in the finals at the very least.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah, I think, they do have access to different funding, but that's because they won the trials and nobody else did.
And again, Jacobs has access to that funding too. And
yeah, exactly.
And still gets to go do this. I think for me, it's a question now of how nice can everybody play in terms of scheduling? Like the slams have adjusted and the Players Championship is moved up. I'm that's more for Rock League than it is anything else. But do you have a situation where, I mean, we'll see what the situation with the landscape is in 4 years, but do you put the Scotties say first week of January so that the women's champion can go play in it? The challenge of that is Curling Canada wants people to travel and come to these events. The first week of January is dead in terms of travel. Like that first full week, people are less inclined to travel that close after the holiday break. So in terms of ticket sales, I don't know. I don't know what the actual right answer is. The only thing I know for sure is that you cannot put both the Brier and the Scotties after the Olympics, because then you're running the Brier at the same time as the Women's World Championship. Mm-hmm. And from a coverage standpoint, you're going to split your audience, and that's not necessarily good for the sport. So no. I don't know. What if you did a joint? I just came up with this. All right. Ready? You ready for this, Scott?
Half-baked idea. I'm ready for it.
A tournament of Brier.
Ooh, you play
the Scotty's tournament of Montana Brier, where we figure out a way, add a fifth sheet, four draws a day, two men's, two women's, and it turns into it would have to be what, like a 12 or 13 day event with the same number of teams, but you run them both at the, you just have like this giant celebration of Canadian curling after the Olympics, and the draw times end up being like 7 a.m., noon, 5 p.m., 10 p.m. And they all just, I obviously that does not work, but I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, because you can't do the Scotties before Christmas either.
No.
In an Olympic, that's too close after the trials. Yeah, mid-January maybe, but also is that too close? I really don't know what the scheduling answer is. But it is a problem that the women's Olympic rep in Canada is financially hurt by going when compared to the men's team that wins.
Yeah, I agree. It is a disadvantage. And let's talk more in the summer about solutions. But off the top of your head, I like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, very salient points there from Emma Miskiw in that interview. And you can check it out on the Broom Brothers podcast in its entirety. So, so there you have it. That's the goings on. We'll talk next week about what's going on in St. John's. It's been a fun week so far. The only thing I would just say real quick, Sandy McEwen, come on, man.
What a shot.
Oh, shot of the year, I think, so far. So good far, on you. Yeah. Good on you, Sandy. So reminded me a little bit of Joel Jordison. Yeah. A little bit. Really, it's been a fun week so far out in St. John's. We'll be back next week to recap what's going on out in St. John's and preview the Women's World Championship, which kicks off a week from Saturday out in Calgary. So a lot going on in the world of curling. So if you want to hear that, everything else we got going on, please do subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, like, rate, comment, all that good stuff. Helps other people find the show, keeps us growing. Head on over to GameOfStonesPod.com. Past episodes are there, plus a link to the merch. We're on the socials at Game of Stones Pod, Game of Stones Podcast on Facebook. And if you want to let us know what you want to hear on the show, GameOfStonesPodcast@gmail.com. Scott, you used to live in beautiful British Columbia. Mm-hmm. The premier of beautiful British Columbia made a bit of news this week.
He did.
Coming up this Saturday night, Sunday morning, I guess officially Sunday morning, mm-hmm. at 2 a.m., the fine folks of British Columbia, with the exception of those in Eastern British Columbia, which already do not participate in the changing of the clocks, but everybody on the mainland, lower mainland, and out there on Vancouver Island will switch their clocks for the final time.
What a time to be alive.
So in the winter, assuming that things don't change here in Ontario, in the winter it'll only be a 2-hour difference between us and Vancouver.
Yeah, that's a big bonus.
For who?
For us, right?
Oh, okay. I guess. You
know, Vancouver.
If you want to watch the game, the Canucks, yeah. If you're a big
start an hour earlier. Team. Yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah. I mean, the people out there, I know the Canucks fans complain when the Maple Leafs go out and they make the Saturday night game in Vancouver start at 4 local.
Yeah.
So if they have to start playing all their Saturday night games at for the 10 o'clock game, where they have to be 8 then? They have to
start it at 8 o'clock.
Yeah. 8 o'clock. It's not going to go well.
Oh, in terms of
the complaints from the locals. On just purely the TV and how it's all centered around Eastern time, which it is, and it's all organized around the maybe the schedule. This concerns me though, Scott, as someone who has read a little bit about this, and I saw some stories today. If it doesn't get light until after 9, I don't care for that. I'd much prefer, I think, permanent standard time than permanent daylight time.
Yeah, I understand that. I think the justification to go to permanent daylight time is really you're switching to mountain standard time.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, but the people in mountain time are a few hundred kilometers to the east. So
yeah, I know.
The where the sun is different.
Yeah. It's still not good for the morning.
No.
And that's when the kids are out going to school, all that kind of stuff, right? And people driving in the dark in the morning to work.
Yeah.
Not
great. Could be a safety issue. And there's certainly safety concerns with the switching. Absolutely. Like no question about it.
Yeah.
But with the kids, that'll take some getting used to. And there were times, Scott, that when I used to work over at on the Quebec side of the border, where a couple times I would have to get up early in the winter and get in around 7 o'clock. And I found that if I walked to work in the dark, like I felt worse than on my normal starting time was around 9, and I was walking to work in the light. Like I physically felt worse. Now that could also be because I was getting up 2 hours earlier and not necessarily going to bed 2 hours earlier. But you know, these are things that I think about when I saw David Eby make that announcement.
And it's the vitamin D too, you know, getting that sunlight in the morning really helps kickstart your metabolism. But I think what the shame is, Sean, is that the Vancouver is losing their sports time zone advantage.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Having baseball start at 4, having football on Sunday start at 10. That was, I mean, my friends are my favorite part about living out there, but that was my second favorite part about living out there, being able to have everything done so early and then you can still go out. And yeah.
Yeah.
So that's,
it'll still be 3 hours in the start. Baseball will still, every baseball game will still start 3 hours earlier. We'll still start at 4.
The football though, you know, that's,
yeah,
it's a thing.
Yeah.
But I guess it gives a little more time to sleep in before going to a game, but yeah, I don't love it.
Yeah. So anyway, that's our very long way of saying, for those of you who live basically anywhere other than Arizona and Saskatchewan and Yukon and some parts of British Columbia and Northern Ontario, the time is changing this weekend. So
that it is.
Make sure you switch those clocks ahead Saturday night into Sunday morning. Don't be like my ninth grade geography teacher who showed up Monday morning an hour late for first period. We were sitting in the classroom for about 40 minutes before she showed up, and she got all the way, Scott, to Monday morning without realizing the time had changed. And we did not have a geography class that Monday morning.
Well, you know, Sean, things are different now, right? Where there's,
it's hard to miss it.
Devices are changing for you automatically, and you know, not to dox you too much and say how old you are, but you know, when you were in ninth grade, there was not a lot of cell phone usage happening.
It was an analog era.
Soup's analog. Yeah.
You know what time it was at my house? 12 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 12 o'clock. Yeah.
So
hopefully everyone is prepared for that. And for those of you out in British Columbia for the final time, switching the clocks, see what happens in the rest of the country and the bordering states. See if, I know a lot of places have like
sort of clauses,
like trigger laws or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Things could happen here on this. But yeah, so the clocks are changing. So the Brier final, we'll all be watching with one less hour of sleep on Sunday evening. Man. And we'll be back, of course, to talk all about it next week. So until we join you then, keep those brooms on the ice and don't dump that intern.
Make the final.